Welcome everyone to Refuge Radio. I'm Gaines Taylor, he, him.
I am Brendan, I use he pronouns.
I'm Piper, I use they, them pronouns.
My name is Mish, I'm she, her.
And we are so excited to have you join our show this week. Mish, why don't you give the folks at home just a quick introduction to who you are and how you exist in this world and what that looks like.
Sure thing. So Mish Van Essen, Mish like in quiche. I live in Virginia. I work for the Table Church in DC, and I have an organization called The Resonance that tries to make resonant leadership commonplace in this world, which is very vague, but I cannot explain that in 1 minute. So that's what I'm going to give you. I'm married. I have two beautiful kids, and I love music, and I love to just hang and relax and have deep conversations with friends.
That's what we're here to do today, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And I loved this. We don't have to talk about this right now, but I noticed on your website that you're part of a band.
Yeah. So I met this tattoo artist at a playground, because that's where you go as a mom. And she was like covered in tattoos. And to those who are listening, I am covered in tattoos, but this person was covered in tattoos, like way more tattoos than I'm like. So I'm like, well, this is a cool person. I'm a little bit intimidated. But anyway, she's super relaxed and laid back and wants to hang out. And she one day said, hey, who wants to start a band? So I'm like, yay, I want to start a band. So here we are. We sporadically meet and we make gritty grunge.
Excellent. Yep.
Love that for you.
Like 90s grunge, but then five times louder.
Love that. Yes. What do you play?
I play guitar and I do the vocals.
Excellent. I'm going to have to bother you after this for links to any recordings you might have, because I am a big fan of that sound. So
Okay. No recordings yet, but yes, we have our own original songs. So that's nice.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to hear a little bit about the work that you're doing and also just about your story and how you got to where you're at right now. I think a great place to start would just be, tell us a little bit about where you come from. What was growing up like for you? Yeah, just tell us a little bit about that. And maybe what were some of your first experiences with faith and maybe faith spaces in general?
Yeah, sure thing. This is an interesting story because everything is ambiguous about my upbringing. I was born in a Pentecostal commune. And of course, when people say, oh, I was born in a Pentecostal commune, they're like, oh, you just hate church. It was not actually a commune. No. The church that I was born in bought a city block in Amsterdam, and people lived there and went to church like that there. It was a commune. And then one day, when I was 5 years old, my parents moved to Israel, and I was not Christian anymore, but I was only Jewish. So it was super weird growing up. But in retrospect, I felt like my upbringing was Jewish. Ask my brothers, who are 4 and 7 years older than me, they would tell you, no, we were raised Christian. So it's very ambiguous. So when we lived in Israel for 5 years, we went to Jewish Orthodox school. And when I was 10, we moved back to the Netherlands. In case I was not clear, I was born in the Netherlands in 1981. We don't talk about that, but I was born in 1981. and when I was 10, we moved back from Israel to the Netherlands, and then we went to the Pentecostal commune again. So I'm like, okay, how about my bar mitzvah, because I was a boy back then. Yeah, that was awkward, I'd say. After that I was put in state custody when I was about 14 years old. So I went into the foster system, and because I still had that memory of Israel in my brain and missing out on my bar mitzvah, not salty at all, not salty at all. I just felt Jewish. So I felt Jewish until I was 29. So yeah, I don't know if that's kind of answers your question of how I came to be. And I say till 29, I flirted with Christianity a little bit, because, you know, Christians are very friendly. Whenever they meet somebody that's not of the faith, everybody is there for you. They want to hear you speak. And I love attention. So I flirted
Welcome
with Christianity. Yay. That's why I said yes. No. I just like you all. yeah, no, but in all seriousness, when I was 29, I started taking Jesus a little bit more serious. So I would say that's my Christian journey, if you will. I don't call myself Christian, but it's just easier to explain it that way. And before that, I was just Jewish. I led synagogue services. I studied Jewish liturgy before your average Jewish kid.
I can't imagine as a child going back and forth between pretty extremely different cultural and religious spaces.
Yeah, it sounds like it would have been a ride.
Yeah, roller coaster, definitely. I am always looking back at it. And again, like I said, how my brothers have interpreted it completely differently. They were like, no, I mean, they also did not go to a foster system. So they probably were more connected with the church that my parents went to. They eventually left that commune and went to a regular church, which I don't know, CAMA. Is that a denomination in America?
Not that I'm familiar with.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Comma
I would
churches,
need to know what the acronym
comma
for,
alliance, yeah. I don't know, Christian and Mission Alliance, something. Something Christian and something Mission and something Alliance, anyway.
Christian and Missionary Alliance.
Okay, they did, they could not do CMA because they had to do the A. Anyway, yes, it was a different experience for all of us, and it was definitely a roller coaster ride, and it was confusing because when we lived in Israel, my mother was not Jewish yet at that point. If you know anything about Judaism goes through a maternal line. My father is Jewish from birth. My mother became Jewish in Israel. So that's why they went to Israel, because my mother wanted to become Jewish. So it's a very rough process. It's not like in Christianity, you just become Jewish. And hooray, you conversion in Judaism is, funnily enough, being on a queer podcast where it's called coming out. So in Judaism, you come out and it takes years, unless you're part of a Reform synagogue, which is a different story. But so my mother went there, she had to go through a very rough, long process, and we had to go to Jewish Orthodox school. And again, this whole worldview of you growing up, studying the Torah as a little kid, it's such a stark contrast when you're never allowed to talk about Jesus, because my mother was like, yeah, we're still sneakily Christian, but we're Jewish because I'm trying to be Jewish. And when they hear I'm also sneakily Christian, they would never allow me to become Jewish. It is complex. Yeah, it left me in like a very weird, ambiguous relationship with religion, which I still have till today. I still am very questioning of why we believe what we believe and what our traditions are. Yeah.
That's such an interesting and unique position to find yourself in. I'm curious, in the midst of sort of this religious ambiguity, in the midst of that time growing up, how did queerness kind of come about for you? Or what did that journey look like during that time?
Yeah, besides my parents giving birth to me in a commune, it was also very conservative, like traditional family values, all the cringe things that I'm certain all y'all are familiar with, unfortunately. And it is also the 90s at this point, late 80s, early 90s. So whenever some sort of queerness was on television, there was lots of side commentary from my parents. Mm-hmm. So two guys kissing right away, filled with disgust. That's the commentary that came in. So I was never going to tell my parents that I messed around with my neighbor boy because mm-hmm. I knew how they would respond. So all my experimentation that I did with my sexuality at that point, gender identity was not really on my mind because I was also trying to figure out my sexuality actively. And again, it's the late 80s and the early 90s. Transness is just not, it was a thing, but it was full operation or not.
Yeah.
What we call trans medicalists right now, the trans med community, that was the only community that was there in the 90s. So yeah, I didn't really feel connection there, nor did I ever have the guts to speak out on it because my parents were not giving me that space. When I went into the foster system, so I'm 14 when I'm in the foster system. There's this culture in the foster system where, at least where I was, I don't know if it was everywhere, that any form of queerness is disgusting. Like my classmates sang queerphobic songs in class and everybody was like, yeah, yeah. So I'm like, sing along, you know, I hope people don't know. And I didn't even know. What am I supposed to know at 14, right? Yeah. And every time homosexuality comes up, at that point, I was pretty certain already that I was bisexual. But still, if homosexuality would come up, it was such an awkward topic because people were always so filled with disgust. Do you know that scene of Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, where everybody is around this police detective, a female police detective, and Jim Carrey captures this woman. It's this pretty looking woman with curls, and she has no pants on, and the entire police force is around them. And he tries to tell everybody, this is not a woman, it is actually a man. And then he pulls her pants down in front of all the police department. I'll send you guys a YouTube video of this. It's terrible. And then apparently there's nothing to see. And then somebody whispers in eyes and Jim Carrey turns the woman around and you can see a bulge in the back of her underpants because lo and behold, it's a trans woman. And the entire police force starts gagging and throwing up when they realize that, oh, I slept with her or I kissed her and she's actually a man. This is terrible. That was funny in the 90s. We had Eminem. We had movie clips like that. This clip just is very vividly in my brain because I just looked it up on YouTube and it's even worse than I remember. So there was just no opportunity to safely come out. And the only experience that I had with the gay community specifically was not nice. I don't know why I was attractive for some predators, but I had very, very bad experiences with some gay people in the foster system, which did not give me a good view of the gay community either. Like, all in all, a mess. So I did not come to terms with my queerness at all, if that answers your question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you had to endure any of that, but it's always just astounding, might not be quite the word, maybe a little dumbfounding, just how much culture has changed towards queerness just in the gap of the generation between you and I, because I was born in 94, and while it wasn't nearly as like a progressive environment by any means to grow up in, especially compared to like how kids are able to grow up today and just yes. be able to accept their queerness at such a uh-huh. young age, it's amazing to me just how far we have come to look back at media from the thousands, the 90s, and see just how much we've changed in terms of what we will tolerate.
Yes, you're so right. I mean, 94, you grew up on Eminem.
I was listening when I was to, listening to him, but yeah.
Yeah, but listening to the lyrics is just, it's not okay. It's not okay seeing the culture change and how the young kids, I call them Zoomers, how the young kids have taught me how to talk about my gender identity. I think the first time I really came to terms with my queerness was around the same time that I met Jesus, where I explained my then fiance, now wife, hey, listen, I don't believe in a gender spectrum. I am definitely not a man, but I may look man. What I tried to say then was I'm NB, but non-binary for listeners who don't know what that means. But it's a huge whatever goes on in my mind. So the kids, that's 10 years ago. 10 years later, people would say, oh yeah, you're just one of us. You're an MB.
Yeah.
It's so different.
It's really so cool quick. To see how much our language and understanding has changed and really opened doors for a lot of people to do more of that exploration and to understand themselves in a different way than they might have 10, 15 years ago. That's one of my questions is, where in your journey did you really start to come to terms with your queerness and explore that a little more fully to embody that? And if you have any particular labels you would use for yourself in terms of your gender and sexuality?
Yeah, today I call myself a woman, or I introduce myself as a trans woman. I always struggle with the decade of non-binary-ness, if that makes sense, because I feel a sense of guilt towards the MB community, because I don't ever want it to feel like I used it as some sort of stepstone, because I sometimes actually get that question. Oh, so was your non-binary phase just a phase, a stepstone, an in-between phase? Like, no, it was absolutely not an in-between phase. It was 100% my gender identity. What just happened in the last, I'm on hormones now for 15 months.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And me openly exploring my gender identity without boundaries in the last 2 years have led me to fully embrace that I'm on the feminine spectrum. I may call myself a woman, but I still don't believe in a binary spectrum. I reject it fiercely. And I believe the same about sexuality. I don't believe in heterosexuality at all, to be honest. So when my wife and I had our first talk about me not believing in a gender spectrum, she was like, okay, I mean, fine. When I told her that I believe that the whole world was at least bisexual, she's like, okay, you have interesting ideas. It didn't matter too much because I was into her, so it did not come up as a conversation a lot. One thing that my wife would bring up, we had a podcast episode about this and she brought it up, was that one day she made a comment about me. She asked me to pick up something from her drawer and I just rummaged through the drawer and made a mess out of it. And she said, that's such a guy thing to do. And I was so upset. I don't remember this, but she does. I was so upset. I'm like, don't you dare call me a guy, whatever. I was so upset by it. And that was it. We just didn't talk about it anymore. She would always tell other people to back the insert beep off. I don't know if you mark this clean.
We do not mark this clean, so feel free.
You can use whatever language you care to.
Oh, okay. So she would tell people to back the fuck up. She would always be protective of my gender identity, even though neither of us called it non-binary at the point. My problem was that I had this false belief that I could work from inside the church to fix things, which is a fallacy I know now. I wonder if it's actually possible ever. Like, I work as a pastor in a very conservative, traditional church. Why would anybody want to change? They come to this church because they are not accepting, right?
Yeah.
So, but that caused me to closet myself more and more. So I was recloseted, even though after I openly came out to my fiance, I was recloseted until March of 2021. And all this time, my wife knew who I was, and she just thought, Misha's just having a 1 foot beard phase. I'm just going to let her go and let her do her thing. Yeah, I was very depressed. Yeah, I was just dirty. Like, I just had a big beard, not because I thought it was cool. I was just dirty. Yeah, understandably. In retrospect, definitely. So I stepped down from ministry in March of 2021, and we moved to Richmond. Richmond is a super queer city. And within weeks, I felt reconnected with my gender identity. That really did it for me. That really made me rethink everything. And I asked everybody around me to address me with they, them pronouns. At that moment, I finally started actively working towards hormones. And then when I started taking hormones in September of 2021, I felt so connected with my feminine self. I always knew that I was more feminine, but I started connecting so much with my feminine self that I was like, okay, I want to do more than just hormones. I want to pursue surgery. I want to do laser my beard away. And those are just all the outward things. But I think the moment that maybe you're at, what you're asking for, of when did I realize what I was, is I sat on my balcony looking at a tree, and I was just on hormones for a couple of weeks, and I'm staring at a tree, and I have self-diagnosed ADD. My brain is spinning 1,000 miles an hour every single second, even in the evening. I have actual clinical chronic insomnia, PTSD and depression, all those things together. I'm sitting on my balcony looking at a tree, and I see the leaves doing whatever leaves do. Is there a word for that?
Yeah, fluttering-ish.
Fluttering. I like it. I see the leaves flutter. And after 5-ish minutes or so, or 10, I have no clue how long it lasted. It was a good chunk of time. I'm realizing I am thinking of absolutely nothing. I'm just staring at the leaves, and I feel the hormones starting to work in my body. And I've slept ever since. And I don't have self-diagnosed ADD anymore. Wow. You know, I had this conversation with somebody about how we are starting to understand the intersex community, where how confusing it must be being born and for other people to assign a gender to you. And how for trans people, how I resonate with that part, because for trans people, there's this sense, I mean, any trans people, when I say trans, I include non-binary, there's this sense of confusion growing up of like, what happens when we were born? What happened? Like, I know we are all born as women, and then a Y chromosome come in, but what happens to your psyche? And we don't even understand the psyche. This is all speculation. Nothing here is scientific. This is just Mish speculating. What is actually going on there? And I really wonder, like, is my body just like not understanding what is going on? And then when that moment hit me where hormones that I cannot produce myself finally were in my bloodstream, and hormones that I did produce myself were suppressed, and I feel that connection, it is unexplainable how much at home I felt in my body. Like, I get emotional thinking about that right now. I'm like, that is such a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
Of 100% knowing, oh wow, I am a woman. What the fuck?
Right. Just feeling at home in yourself is such like an important part of that exploring your gender identity in the parameters of like, this is something that is wholly mine too, and not something that you necessarily have to take all of the outside influences that are telling you, because you were born with these parts, you need to act in this way. And knowing that you can just live life how you want to and how you feel is like fitting for you specifically is just such a liberating thing. And I say that as a non-binary individual too, because the amount of influence that society and culture has on who we think we have to be is just astounding to me. I feel like that kind of plays into your work in a way as well. Reminded me the term for the modeling.
Mental models.
Mental models, yeah. And how much of that is shaped just by our experiences as well. Would you care to explore that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Piper is referring to, I have an organization called The Resonance, which is kind of goes hand in hand with my doctoral work on resonant leadership, inclusive leadership, and mental models. And specifically mental models is a concept that I'm so intrigued by. In 2017, there was a very shocking piece of data that there were 1 in 5 Americans knew a trans person. That number includes non-binary community again. And 1 in 5 Americans claim to have seen a ghost. Just every time.
I'm as real as Casper.
Wow.
It's shocking and funny, of course. But it's shocking because the opinion of in 2017, it's a little bit higher now. It's in the 30s right now, which is still a low amount, but at least it's growing. People get to know their trans kin. They realize, oh, all along, my buddy is trans or my colleague, right? I find it an interesting concept because that means that in 2017, 80% of Americans' opinion on transness came from reading Wikipedia, watching YouTube, watching movies, or doing nothing at all, which is absolutely frightening. That's the essence of mental models. So mental models states that how you see the world is how you behave in the world. So what that means is, if in this example case, how you see trans people is how you behave towards trans people. But if you don't know any trans person, you're going to have an opinion about them based on something. And unfortunately, trans people in the media have been represented poorly. It goes back all the way to black and white movies where the trans people were villains, and then there was a whole period of film where they try to emasculate minority populations, specifically black men, and portray them as women to try to take away their masculinity, and go all the way ahead into shows like like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, which was the 90s, go on to shows like ER and Bones, where we were a gimmick. It's like, oh, we found the body of a woman. Oh, but the bone structures look like it's a man. And then, oh, we got a great gimmick episode. So our opinions of trans people comes from that. It's the same as like our opinions on black men. Black men and violence in that combo have been disproportionately portrayed in the media in a negative way. So by default, the cards are stacked against black men. By default, the cards are stacked against trans women, because this is what we see on the media, and we consume a lot of media. I always like to say it's hardly their fault, even if you think about it. Yes, of course, people need to do their due diligence, but if we never are taught to deal with these things, and if we never meet people from outside our group, how are we ever going to learn? So if that's how we see the world, we are going to behave in a certain way towards people. In these two examples, this is how we're going to behave towards Black men, or this is how we're going to behave towards trans women. And I just find it fascinating because everybody is just a conversation away from understanding that the world is much more complex.
Yeah. Well, it's that idea that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. If you haven't had to think about things differently than they've been portrayed to you through your upbringing, through what you consume in the media, it's not something you're going to think about because you don't know to think about it.
Yeah.
Where I find it interesting, especially being a queer person who exists on the internet, having to deal with people who think they know anything about you just because of what they've been informed by whatever echo chambers they inhabit, and then having to dealing with a lot of trolls online.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned earlier having to navigate a very conservative space and feeling like you had to be the one to fix it from within. Just yesterday, our buddies, Brian and Shay over at Queer Theology, shared a post about how you don't have to try to fix people's mindsets.
That's right.
It's exhausting. I had an instance just on Twitter earlier this week, trying to advocate for queer people who exist in Christian spaces, and then just getting back with this brick wall of, no, the Bible says this is wrong, and literally just quoting the Bible back at them, trying to get them to see what you are saying is not backed up at all. And it's just a futile endeavor. So the post from Queer Theology, and you can find this on their Instagram, or if you go to queertheology.com/unaffirming, they have an entire list of resources. But having it not be so effective to try to fight fire with fire, or to even fight at all, to set patterns of behavior that actually work and will actually be more fruitful for you. But before I read that, what has your experience been kind of in that same space?
Yeah, I want to come off the bat right away that I believe in this thing that I call non-alienation, which I understand that not many are going to agree with me on this, because sometimes alienation is just the way it is. So I want to nuance it a little bit by saying, when I say non-alienation, I don't mean not standing up when we see social injustice. We need to stand up. As a matter of fact, I miss it. Sometimes I hear people tell me, hey, Mish, we're so sorry about what we saw on Instagram. I'm like, but why didn't you say anything? I just have to deal with it by myself. I'm like, oh, but we don't want to be a bother. I'm like, or you can just tell them to fuck off for me. That would feel great, because then at least I know you're in my side. But sometimes I see, oh, I have 2,000 views. Are all those views what the comments say? Especially Instagram, for some reason, is my worst troll magnet. But so I still believe in non-alienation. But when it comes to trolls, I personally believe they're a sociopath. I'm not even meaning that in a, I don't mean that fastidious. I mean sociopaths online, like, thrive on certain affirmations, whether that affirmation is rage or fire, right? Or trying to reason with them. Any sort of reaction is a great reaction for a sociopath. So I believe that true trolls are sociopaths. Then there is that group in between that's exactly like you say. I made a video on Romans 1 where I stated, like, again, the mental models. I'm trying to explain that it's problematic when we hear men committing shameless act with other men, that our brains go to homosexuality instead of let's rob a bank, or let's do terrible things to male children or whatever we could put in there. It's right away homosexuality. And then there's this list of murder and treachery and whatever that list is. And then it's like this list of like, what does not fit within the list, right? Yellow, green, blue, table. Table doesn't fit in the list.
Yeah.
Murder, theft, deceit, homosexuality. Well, homosexuality doesn't fit in that list. We have a problem with looking at Romans 1. That's what I was trying to say. My whole video on that was, listen what you say. And then the first comment was like, but Romans 1 clearly say that homosexuality is a sin. You didn't even look at my video. So there's that type of troll that I do engage with. I do engage. Sometimes I private message them, or sometimes I respond to them like, hey, I just explained this in a video, or let's go, let's do this. And then there's the best person is the not troll at all. There's the people that are just uncomfortable with hearing what I have to say. But the people that aren't comfortable with what I have to say, that's why I believe so much in non-alienation, are the people that after discomfort, they feel duped. And after they feel duped, they will start seeing. They will wake up. They will become woke, right? I want to be there for them. Because I was touched by the words of, I call her Mama Brown. She's my mother-in-law. She used to be part of a big Bible church. And she's always been nice to me and always been friendly to me. But ever since she has been like publicly affirming towards me, it was impossible for her to stay at her church. One day she got a phone call from her pastor and said, hey, we need to talk about Kim, which is my wife. I heard she's going through some marital trouble. I'm like, what the fuck? Because
news to you, I guess,
her wife is trans. You know, it was so out of the blue because my parents-in-law are so introverted. They never talk out loud. They never speak up. They're just very in the background. So the fact that the pastor has heard that and then decided to call them, even though they've been members for 40 years and never had a phone call, is just disgusting. But she said that Jonathan Merritt, she heard Jonathan Merritt talk, and Jonathan Merritt said, don't be too judgmental of those who judge you, because 5 seconds ago, you were one of them. And she used that in her own context. Like, I'm finally starting to see what that means. And she's like, I feel duped. And now she went to a church, and the first thing she asked is like, can I bring my daughter? My daughter is a trans woman. If it's Christmas, I would like to bring my daughter. So I'm not going to go to your church unless you're affirming. Day and night difference. So that whole concept of being duped and understanding that we all once used to be that judgmental piece of shit.
Thank you for that nuance, because I find that encouraging, because the first two groups you said I'm kind of done with, but I don't want to lose that third group, that uncomfortable group in the conversations. And I think it is so easy to do that, but it's tough, because those can be family members who are just figuring it out still, and I know that very well, and I'm sure all of y'all know that very well. And it's like that we're good friends or whatever, and so I think that nuance is very important, but it's the troll, the sociopaths and the trolls in the middle that are just like, well, Romans 1 clearly says, and it's fuck off. Don't watch the video, or don't just don't talk.
Agreed.
Mish, I am so curious about this, because I feel like it's so difficult for me personally to hold that space for other people, because I think for me, I'm you as a cis hetero person, usually also white and also assigned male at birth, I'm you are talking about a theoretical thing that has no impact on you.
Yeah.
I am advocating for like sometimes basic human rights.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm like, what I'm doing is asking you to respect me and respect my community.
Mm.
And why is that a conversation?
Yeah.
That we need to have. And I think for me, like, though I totally get that. And I guess for me, I'm curious, how do you in yourself navigate that emotionally? And what does that look like for you?
Yeah, that's a good question, because personally, I don't have that tolerance. So for my personal life, I'm just done with cishet white men. I am done. I'm also Indonesian. That's why my mother was not Jewish. She's Indonesian, the biggest Muslim country. I don't know what her background is, but not only is my mother Indonesian, she came from an island group called the Maluku Islands. And the Dutch invaded Indonesia. It was an archipelago with 17,000 islands. They used the Maluku Island people in their army to subject the rest of the Indonesians. Space, cishet white men that take up space in a place that is not theirs, I am so done with, you know, especially when it's, oh, but we're trying to find solutions. I'm even talking in ally spaces. I am so fed up with it. So in personal life, so in my faith group, I don't have tolerance for it. And in my friend group, I don't have tolerance for it, because cishet white men have taken too much space, periods. Both, they try to erase my Asianness. They try to erase my queerness. They try to erase my womanhood. It is so annoying, and people need to start understanding that. However, there's a lot of people that we deal with professionally or acquaintantly. Is there a word for that? That are acquaintances.
Sounds right.
Yeah. I think separating that for me has been very helpful, because it's not healthy to... Let me rephrase it like this. I just had a conversation with some queer friends, and they constantly have this conversation with people in their close-knit relationship group that are very toxic to them. And my advice is always been cut them out. So you see the difference there, where I'm like, yeah. No, I don't care if they're just uncomfortable. Our safety and the mental space that we have comes first. If that means it is a parent, if it's a brother, a sister, or even somebody that claims to be an ally, or even somebody from the community itself, I always advise cut them out, because your mental health, especially as you go through discovering your sexual identity or your gender identity, is so important.
Mm-hmm.
But I have thick enough skin in all the other spaces to think, okay, you're trying to figure things out. You just have no clue what to ask, or you just never met a trans person, or you're just stuffed with opinions that you don't even know how they got into that. Let's talk about that, because guess what? I have those too. Whenever I have a coffee, whenever I work with somebody, or whenever a church reaches out and they say, do you want to speak? Yeah, that's when I'm okay with it. The people that are uncomfortable are going to be tomorrow's allies. I strongly believe that we got to keep that. Yeah. But we first take care of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and it's the queer theology post that I never finished reading really echoes a lot of what you just said. What they recommend instead of like trying to fight using the word as our sword or whatever, sorry, Christianese, is to like set and enforce boundaries to keep yourself safe and happy, to focus your time on and energy on people who genuinely want to learn and grow. If people are like sitting in that uncomfortableness and then coming out of that feeling of being duped, as you say, and genuinely want to learn and to understand and to like come alongside you and grow their worldview, those are the people worth focusing on, not the people who just want to be angry in your Instagram comments.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
They also encourage speaking from your story, because while you can argue about translations of the Bible, your life experience is your own, and it's not really something that's up for debate. Or how your queerness enriches faith and is more compelling than a clobber verse or whatever. And to build power to make queer phobia untenable in your family, community, and nation. If it's not something that we tolerate flat out, like if we're not going to deal with the cis-het white boys anymore, it's
exactly.
It's all about cultivating ourselves and our peace and like the safety of not only our own personal selves, but for the entire queer community. And that's very important. And again, a lot of that you've already said, so I didn't even need to read the post or bring it up at all.
No, I think it's such a good summary, though, because if you start off with not tolerating queer phobia, because it's not a social justice issue or a political issue. Mm-hmm. You, Piper, are a human rights issue.
Yeah.
We first got to establish that. If my or your existence ever comes up for debate, then there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, it's like, hi, sorry, I am unfortunately for you here and exist as fully myself. And if that's going to be a problem for you, that's an ish you, not an ish me.
Yes, amen. Amen.
Mish, something else, kind of going back a little bit in our conversation, talking about mental models, something that I think we've kind of touched on, but I would love to hear your thoughts on this like more explicitly. And when I think of mental models, and then I think about queerphobic theology, or I think about even like a hell theology, basically these theologies where that have an opinion about a certain group of people or a type of person. I'm wondering how you would view that through a mental model lens, and what kind of impact that would have on how people treat people in those categories.
I start with false dichotomies, and what I mean with is that we often have conversations that are not actually there, they don't exist, and both opponents and allies get trapped in this. And it's a fly trap. It just doesn't exist. Like what happened in Florida, for example, where they blocked puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and surgery for kids under 18. We're talking about a couple of hundred kids.
Yeah.
People believe that it's millions. And also, since there's no hysterectomies and no orchiectomies and no vulvoplasties and no vaginoplasties happening to kids under 18, what are we actually talking about? So we're talking about puberty blockers, which is fully reversible, right? So we know that. We know this. We've known this all along. But why is there a conversation happening wherever opponents say something about, but people can just go in and have this fad and get a hysterectomy when they're 16, even though that's not true? What happens culturally is that we take debates, and before we know, we're talking about something that's not actually existing. The same happened in Utah about sports, allowing trans women in sports. And the Utah governor was, we're talking about three kids. I'm not going to sign this. And I'm Republican. So, yes, these are mental models. And that's where we start. Because there are false dichotomies that we get trapped into talking about a thing that's not actually there. And it's important that we find what is actually there. So for a Floridian, it must be something like fear. We shouldn't assume that the entire Floridian population is, or 70% that voted for DeSantis is a troll. That's unrealistic. but the majority of them are probably in that group of we can talk with them. As loud as they yell online, they would never yell that loud to me in my face. So we can have a conversation. And when we get to the bottom of it and when we remove everything that's not true from both sides and we get to the core, can we talk about what is exactly making you afraid? Why do you think that the queer community are groomers? Why do you think that 16-year-old girls get a hysterectomy? Why is that in your heart? Because if that was the case, I would be afraid as well. You know? So, but they believe it. We need to have the conversation about that, not about giving argumentations about why puberty blockers are good. We know that they're life-saving. We know it. We don't have to reiterate what we believe, nor do we have to explain to people that puberty blockers are life-saving, because that's not what the conversation is about. So mental models and false dichotomies, they're really intricately connected with these pieces, because I think ultimately it comes down to things as talkable about. Like, we can talk about fear. Does that make sense? We cannot talk about, again, human absolutely. Rights issue, we cannot talk about. But the moment that it becomes clear that it's fear, I was afraid to vote because I thought maybe January 6th will happen again and then nothing happened. That was a fear that we need to talk about that. I can bring up all kinds of arguments of like, yeah, January 6th, it was terrifying and people are stationed at voting stations. Well, not at least not in my city. There was nothing to be afraid of. I could just vote. Everything was fine. Can we talk about my fear? Where did it come from? Because it came from somewhere legit. We all have communal trauma of January 6th. So what are we going to do about this? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like you kind of answered a question in a way that I've had in my brain, which is, how do you have a conversation with someone when we can't even agree on how to discover truth? Mm-hmm. Because it's, I feel like a lot of the barrier when I have conversations with people is, I can have facts, I can have data, I can have verifiable information, but none of that matters because that's not how this person decides what's true.
That's right.
And so I feel like taking it down to an emotional level, that makes so much sense. That's a great, I feel like that is such a great approach in having a conversation with someone and really getting to the root of what is this really about? Mm. And I think you're right. I feel like a lot of the root of a lot of things is often fear, which is a very normal human thing to experience.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because I was definitely that person that would use my theological background. I know Greek and Hebrew, you know, so like, but that's not how it's translated in the rest of the world, blah, 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 this and that. I would get so frustrated with people then would come to me and said, no, you're wrong. Like, I am a theologian. I know what I'm talking. It never amounted to anything. So as verifiable as my data is, it's irrelevant if it does not get to the heart of the problem within a conversation with somebody. So for me, it's just a decision of like, do I just want to lay in bed for the rest of my life, which sounds very attractive for the record.
Yes. Much safer. Yes.
Yes. Much safer.
There we go.
Yeah, exactly. Do I want to lay in my bed the rest of my life, or do I want to readjust my strategy? We cannot try the same strategy again. Data does not hold the same value anymore today. There's way too many stories that I now see of grandparents going off the deep end because Facebook has told them X, Y, and Z. To acknowledge that you're wrong is an embarrassment. So we have to understand that it's an embarrassment for people, that some people may know that they're wrong, maybe potentially. That like, oh yeah, all the stuff that I've been listening to on Facebook, that was weird stuff. It is embarrassing to have to acknowledge that. So we have to meet them. We have to meet them there. Well, you don't have to, but I choose to do that.
Well, I am wondering, we always ask this question of everybody. So my question for you is, what advice or what words of encouragement would you have for someone maybe who was where you're at 10, 15, 20 years ago and is listening to this podcast and just beginning to go on a journey of discovering their sexual orientation or their gender and really scared about what all of that could mean for them and what that is feeling like for them in their body?
First things first, be safe. Yeah. Come to Richmond and I'll be your fairy godmother. Absolutely. But yeah, be safe. With that being said, anything within your possibility, I would argue you cannot find a relationship since we're here on Refuge Radio, right? I don't think you can find a true relationship with Jesus unless you found yourself. I know it's tempting to say, but Jesus can help you along the way. I personally don't think it's a good idea to use Jesus as a crutch. And I think there's nothing more important than exploring any form of exploration, self-doubt about your gender journey, your sexual identity. Take every single thing serious and explore it and find people that you can talk about it with. Again, more important than your career, more important than your degree, more important than anything. Even if you're in high school, I'm so sorry. it sucks to feel like you're stuck, but you are not. You are not. Like I said, come to Richmond if needed, and I'll take care of you. But seriously, explore your sexual identity, explore your sexual orientation, because it's not going to get easier later. It is a journey worth having. And from somebody that's mid-journey right now, definitely not on the other side of it, but somebody that's mid-journey, is beautiful here. Not in Richmond. This journey is beautiful. Richmond too. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. If anyone can't make it to Richmond, where can they reach you online?
Yeah, a couple of ways. Miche Van Essen on Instagram. That is MicheVanEssen. I did that. Wow. I'm not good at spelling because it's my second language. that's a great way. But also, starting Monday on jointheresonance.com. That's much easier to remember.
Awesome.
I'm here for any questions. As awkward as they can get, I'm here for all questions. Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on sometime, because just in these last 5 minutes, you've said several things. I'm my gosh, please tell me more about that.
Yeah, I'll be glad to.
So I would love to hear more about not using Jesus as a crutch. Yes. Everything about that.
I was the like, same way. It's like, more. Oh, now I have like a ton of questions. More.
Yeah.
It's been so wonderful. Thank you so much, Miche, for sharing your story, for sharing the large amount of knowledge and wisdom that you have about so many things. It's been such an honor to chat with you and hear your story. So thank you so much. Wow, that was an incredible conversation. So meaningful for me. I feel like I walked away with a lot of new insight, a lot of things I'm going to be thinking about. And I hope the same for you. I hope that brought some new insight for yourself and
for those of you that are thinking through your own sexual orientation, gender identity journey. Hopefully that brings some encouragement to you as well.
We've just got some quick housekeeping stuff going on. We made a video of this, but just to remind people, we are continuing our podcast. There's no change in the fact we are doing this podcast for the future. And our Discord is still staying up. The things that are changing is the Refuge Faith website will no longer be running and our emails will no longer be running of what's going on. If you need to contact us, we're on Instagram at Refuge Faith and also Twitter at Refuge Faith. So check us out there if you need to contact us. Just some little, you know, changes we're making. No big deal. Like I said, we're doing the podcast. You're still going to be able to listen to us. We're still going to have great interviews, all that good stuff. We love y'all. We're still going to be here. With that being said, Brendan, do you want to close us out? Not pray us out, but close us out.
Not pray us out. I will not pray us out, but I will close us out. Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Queer Stories and listen to our lives. And we hope that it encourages you. And we hope that you come back and listen to more in the future. So thank you so much. And we'll see you soon.